7.75% rate. is it about the past? Is it about the future? Is it about what kind of return do you think you can take in the market going forward from here? Another forecasting firm, which does a report of city and county public pensions, reports that their forecast is a long-term median return of city and county pension assets equal to 6.5% per annum. That 6.5% estimate is 1.5 percentage points below the median actuarial interest rate assumption of 8%, and that 8% was in late 2010 and not currently. That surely was quoted along with other folks trying to keep maybe some of you off the ground in an article in the Wall Street Journal in October, right around the time of our previous meeting. And in that article, I would just briefly get a quote from a market strategist, Jeffrey Craven, in that article says, to target 8% means some aggressive trade, but what to them? The target 8.5%. I don't know that we should actually try to have a greater amount of wealth. But I mean, trying to be safe with the assets that we have before us. This loop report that you have up here, and I'm assuming this is in your packet, I don't know what for a fact. But the loop report that you have before you, I did not bring these notes, so they're going to be a lot, they're not, I don't know where they came from, but it just so happened to be quoting from their phone, so thank you so much. Is that the 8% book, if you'll refer to page 5 in that particular, publication, 8% that says that concerning effects by this gross substantial controversy, we're again at 8.5. Page 6, when governments have a contractual obligation to fully fund these promised benefits, most would argue that investment managers should take the stance of being appropriately risk averse. 13 plans that were reviewed by Bloomberg and the Institute of table, 13 plans increased their investment return assumption by an average of 38 basis points, 0.38%. On a panel, for example, the wellness plan from 8% to 7.75%. And though many of the others reduced one or two of their rates, they did not reduce them all. So what should the rate be? I propose that that would be plenty to make way for other folks to keep on speaking. If you look at your state board of investment target allocation, it'll show you that the SBI currently invests 45% in domestic stocks, 15% in international stocks, 18% in bonds, 20% in alternative investments, I'll get back to that in a second, and 10% in cash. Okay, that information will be in your report. We can do a greater return assumption by looking at that and asking what is the normal rate we'd expect to receive over the long term for each of those asset classes. Well, most of you know cash pays zero currently. That if you have a savings account, probably know that to your degree. Bonds pay are currently paying, in the area of 10%, 10.5%. The Federal Reserve just last month came out and guided us that at least till 2014, very short term interest rate will remain between 0.25% and 1%. Okay, so that's for going on 2.5 years from now. So in that 18% of your portfolio devoted to bonds, you can expect a pretty low rate, but not quite how much we've got. We can talk about that's the part of it. So the question then is, what do you do about stocks? How much should you expect to get from stocks? And what are you getting for your bonds? Are getting 10% or 10.5%? Typically, what you do is you try to add a premium for the stocks over bonds. It's pretty standard. If a bond has a higher place in liquidation, if you have an open equity, you liquidated bondholders get paid before stockholders. So stockholders pay a premium to take on the risk of holding equity rather than holding bonds. the investment that's fully risky because risk is rising. That equity risk premium currently sits at about 6%. So about 5% a year, though interest rates are higher. So you put that together, that put our in the context for your portfolio, you might make 8% of mortgage-owned bonds and cash, and to an amount of zero. Your proposal that you're going to find is tends to be below 8% so far. So the only way one can reach the 8.5% assumption currently is to make some assumption about the nature of the alternative asset film and the international asset film that would lead you to believe that they can return a sufficient high amount to get the 8.5% target. Again, I argue, maybe you could have done that in the past. This isn't the past, this is not about the past, it's about the future. It's about what the market will give you in the next 30 years, not the last 30. All of the ways in which you have to reach 8.5% return if you accept a little bit of this back of the envelope calculation that gives you, again, people get up here at some point, you have a greater detail without the data behind this. Even if you have to get rates of return on those assets north of 10%. Now, if 10% returns to these markets anymore, I'm not taking on a significant amount of risk. So, I would leave here before we go, but just one before I step down and let other people speak, I just point out that when we met back in October, I got some stuff here and said that they felt 8% was okay. We now look at what the actuarial firms are saying, and they're saying instead 8% is at the high end. This is why I wrote for 7.5. I wrote 15.07 with a 7.5% assumption, feeling that it was safe and trying to guide our State Board of Investment that preservation of capital, return of capital, might be a little more important than some of these investments that return on capital. We might need to think about being sure that these funds are in a position that if the market does turn at the same time, we have these large numbers of funds who are my age, a little older than me, who are going to be retiring in the next 3 to 5 years, that they have funds available to them to meet the obligations they've given to them to return for their lifetime service. This isn't about trying to get cheap. This isn't about trying to reduce something. This, in fact, means that if all the things equal, as you'll hear from other folks, certainly, that the state probably could lawyers be expected to pay for a little while longer. An additional contribution if it's getting a required contribution. We'll be talking about that, I hope, on a later date. But we need to somehow make sure that we're not encouraging with an 8.5% rate an investment portfolio, an investment strategy that takes on more risk than is appropriate for me as is that there is a time between the rate at which you see these assets grow and the rate at which you see other things grow. In the next day you're going to hear about assumptions about salary growth. You can talk about inflation as well. All of those things come into play, and those experiences are different for a teacher versus a person.
Mr. Chair, Representative, do you think that the consumption rates should be based on what the actuary has studied in the plan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, actuaries, accountants, economists, finance people all talk to each other. I think actuaries have a pretty good understanding of this. But we don't speak, in isolation with one another. We actually are talking to each other. And I've seen from actuaries matches the line of thinking that it will be partly so on finance or economics.
What part of the assumption rate or deciding what the assumption rate should be? Or what the assumption rate will be recommended? What part does the experience study have to do with that?
That has something to tell us. I mean, history's always got it. There's no question about that. But I would also caution you that history's only got it in terms of the data to the extent that we have the data. We have I think it's fair to say, about 80 years worth of pretty good data on stock markets. We have a substantial bit of experience historically with what our state market investment returns. Stocks and bonds have been around a lot longer than we've actually measured them in terms of having data to look at. So, history is a guide, but only to some extent. You expect life, because that's where the light is, it isn't necessarily very practice keys.
Chair,
assessment. Thank you. that were also invested with salary growth and payroll growth assumptions. You recall from our discussions last fall that our economist here raised some concerns about those assumptions and made some recommendations to us. And I think that we can just look at the interest rate assumption and do a complete job on this. We also have to look at what our assumptions are for salary growth and payroll growth, and are those still valid? And we still make some adjustments to that based on that testimony we heard last fall. again, talking to Craig about this issue, because I thought this is a debate that comes in Hopkins with Peppers. Cannabis paperboard investment continues a remarkable performance for over 30 years or can't they? I would argue that the repair system bit is not about whether the glass is half empty or full, but what's actually in the glass. You know what I mean by that is this is more than just becoming argument. There are potential real and consequential impacts on fund health. Future therapies are obviously depending on if public services are influenced by it, and taxpayers are told by this, so it's really important that we get this right. So my recommendations are based on lowering it. But also there's a reporting issue that derives from this I'd like to also share. We should lower the expected return because the use of high expected rates of return are actually dangerous to the defined benefit plan survival. Those are not my words. Those are the words of Martin Baring, the former chief investment officer of Barclays Global Capital, who recently wrote a book on fixing the defined benefit plans. It's called Putting Risk and Cost of Defined Benefit Plans Back Under Control, but we'll have that on top if anybody's really interested in it. It must be noted, I think, that he is an enthusiastic supporter of defined benefit plans. This is not based on a political investigation, right? If that is the person who believes strongly in these plans, believes their continuity is important, believes they're a preferred approach to retirement. And his argument is this, if a plan is underfunded, which we are right now, the smaller quantity plan assets cannot hold their own against the liabilities, which are also compound expected rates of return in this case, 8.5%. In short, you're going to need a lot more than 8.5% if it really works. His point is that the way these kinds of underperformance, such as we've experienced today or recently, crush fund health. And the higher the expected rate of return, the more likely the number in length of underperformance periods would be. Larry is not alone on this. There are a growing body of pension experts and investing experts who are also questioning the upward wardrobe on this and the implications for defined benefit plans. We really encourage the commission to send out testimony from experts in this area for further discussion of this idea. But the point is this, if you strongly believe in the importance of preserving a defined benefit plan, lowering the expected rate of return is actually a smart thing to do. The second issue I want to raise, and this is really not a thought with some prepared self-interest views, there's an underlying sort of perspective that pervades this whole discussion, that the sustainability of the defined benefit plan can be measured by how well the state board of investment achieves the expected return of 8.5%. We believe this is simply not correct. Investment returns are reported by the state board of investments, as noted in the commission memo, which I'll be back before you, are time-weighted investment returns. Time-weighted investment returns measure investment performance. They are used to benchmark state board investments efforts against other investment performance indices to see how well the investors, the investment practices are doing. It's an essential piece of pension reporting and asset management. The problem is they're largely irrelevant to the issue of defined benefit plan sustainability because they ignore the impacts of cash flows in and out of the fund. In this case, the contributions in and benefits paid. Investment returns are only as good as the assets that will take advantage of them. And there can be a huge difference inflated rate of return is identical to the multiple sorts of scenarios. So the impact of contributions and costs of that deposit cannot be excluded from performance calculations. These things are very susceptible to return dollar cost averaging. We don't put money in when it's less needed and when the markets are most likely to rebound because of the conditions we've seen it before and we will see it again. Measuring investment performance is not the same as measuring pension fund performance. I think that's important to understand. We need a new reporting scheme. We need to report internal rates of return on these funds as money weighted so that we can include the impact of the timing and size of contributions and withdrawals from the system. This is the way to measure and track performance against the long-term sustainability or pension rate of return. Let me get your answer.
Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Julie Wild, Legislative Director for Aspen Council 5. I'm here tonight to speak on behalf of the organizations connected to my Aspen reality and the organizations that I'm representing. After careful consideration and deliberation, we are of the firm and unanimous opinion that the Pension Commission should not move ahead with legislation and not enact any changes to the retirement investment return assumptions this session. We supported and worked with bipartisan 2010 comprehensive pension reform legislation. Our legislation has gained national recognition as a model of help with post-pension issues. Those current challenges have been positive and should be given time to work. And a clear and major assessment of grants can best be made. And this was indicated earlier, the plans have made up to $1 billion within the last Minnesota Government Engineers Council, Mill Management Association, Minneapolis Committee of 13, Inter-Faculty Organization, Minnesota Nurses Association, Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, Minnesota State College Faculty, Education Minnesota, Retirees, Proxy Council by Retirees, Minnesota State Troopers Association, the Police Federation of Minneapolis, Retired Educators Association of Minnesota, and the Minnesota Annual Civil, which you're already heard from. I'd also like to indicate that there are a lot of members of our organizations that are just listed in the room here tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Clark.
Institute and still am, but we joined the Center of the American Experiment.
the only thing that we know for sure is the Trump. And whatever we project is that when we sat here and, you know, we talk about the perspective of the 2000s, we go back to the ranks. But we don't think that that is not going to bubble. We know there's a place where we're eating 15% of it. Retiring at 8% benefit increase since we were at 100% fund. Then we have a dot-com bubble break. And for the rest of the other next 3 or 4 years, we're going to bring in until we have a good promotion process and other procedures. The reality is this is a very volatile situation. Spot market, bond market, international market, all part of the Western markets are going to be volatile. We know that. We know that going to happen. So, Mr. Chairman, the first thing I can say is our homework now, the answer that we gave you at that point in time was still as high as 8.36 in our projection for approximately the next 3 years. That sounds very precise. It is very precise, but it's also very, very wrong. So, Mr. Chairman, all I can do is try to respond to any questions you want to have. Our executive
director. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Vicker, good to see you. The question I have for you is if the rate of return is going to be assumed at 8.5, what happened at 8%? That might have affected an actuarial formula that contributed to those percentages of payouts. And so my concern is less for the downtime, but for the exuberant good times when future retirees, future benefits are being reduced. Because those in the current are living, fortunately, through a time when things were unusually high. And for me, it's a matter of what is, such as, I know that these assumed rates of return do affect the calculations for the payouts. So I think it's important for us that it isn't, to me, just a matter of how well our board of investments can invest, but those earnings need to be retained from the tough times.
Well, Mr. Chairman, from the interdisciplinary community, you're absolutely correct. The formula that were in place during the 90s provided for some significant increases. But those formulas have been changed. And the legislature and the Congress has been doing a very good job, and those have been going forward. I also think there was very much a matter of state. The reality is that we have was the biggest break. I don't think we ever had any more stocks than we ever had in one time. The break wasn't going from March to 500 points every day. We brought in more money in our trade than we made a few things in Canada. But, you know, I heard John was right. We got to have the money from the day. But we were disciplined, rebalancing the world and not to pick up our ass to get there. And I think I have certain state board and statements of the money. elected, so as my future didn't let you down, I've got a tree.
Thank you.
that you deliver.